So this morning, I thought, you know, I could give a message about Romans 13, where civil authorities are appointed by God, they're ministers, and that would be our military, our police. And I just felt more to hear from some of you. So I've asked them to come. I'm going to bring Jared, you're right out to shoot. You're Mr. Navy. Come on up here. And you can turn that mic on. So I asked them each to take 3-4 minutes just to share what they did and where they are, and then maybe something in the Lord that you could share, even if you weren't in the Lord when you were in. God speaks to us. It's called prevenient grace. Long before you said, I'm yours, Lord, he's already working in your life. He knew us before the foundations of the earth, and he knew he would bring you to different moments and junctures in your life. So go ahead, Jared. You have the floor.
I have the floor.
Okay. You have.
Thanks, Kevin, for asking me to come up here. That's super cool. And I want to actually, because all the times when you are standing up here and asking for us to stand up, you're normally not acknowledged, but but I wanted to thank you for your great service to this nation. It was in a time where this country was really messed up, and a movement against against what you were doing for the service, and I definitely thank you for your service.
Thanks.
Yeah, so you just want to sit up here with me, huh? No, no, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. No, sit down.
You want the pole?
No.
I want to do it kind of like a talk show thing, but I.
Well then
see
let's
how it works.
Talk.
No, you talk.
Let's talk. Yeah,
okay.
No.
You only have 2 minutes left, so you got to hustle.
Oh man, I got to hustle. I'm glad to give that time to you. When Kevin asked me to look back on my time in the service and my relationship with the Lord, it was definitely different. I was born and raised Catholic. I was baptized, confirmed, First Communion. My relationship with the Lord at that time was completely different. Praying consisted of Our Fathers and Hail Marys and Glory Bees and Act of Contrition, and my relationship with the Lord seemed to go through the church rather than a direct relationship. But I was in the service I went in when I was 17. My parents had to sign for me to go in. They were really glad to do that and see whether someone else could straighten this kid out, that's for sure. But I served from 90 to 94. I was in the Persian Gulf in 90. I was on LPH, a helo carrier, attached to a helicopter mine countermeasure squadron in 90. And then I went back in 94 for Operation Restore Freedom and Hope. On board the Lincoln, where I worked flight deck of the Abraham Lincoln, loading bombs. Not a real direct correlation to the civilian world, but it was kind of what it was. I got to see some really cool places. I went to Hong Kong when it was still a British colony. I went to Perth. Got to see a lot of the armpit of the world, what I call the armpit of the world, Bahrain, Al Dhafra, Kuwait City, Abu Dhabi, Dubai back then wasn't what it is now. It was really cool. And the one story that I could think of was actually when I first went in the Navy. My friends and I thought that it would be really cool if we stayed up all night the night before the recruiter came to get me, and we could talk all night, and the recruiter would come and get me, and it'd be really cool. And it was. I stayed up with them, and then the recruiter came and picked me up at 4 o'clock in the morning and brought me up to L.A. into MEPS, which is a transitional center, into boot camp, and was up all that day. And then they send us down finally at 10 o'clock at night on a bus. And we don't actually, we stop and get something to eat, and then we get to boot camp. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. They throw some sweats at us that we were in for like 4 days, I swear. and they walk us to our transitional barracks, and they tell us we have enough time to shower and get back down here for muster. We're going to breakfast. So on to day 3 without any sleep, and this idea of staying up talking all night is getting worse and worse. And we go through that day, and medical stuff, more signing paperwork, and we finally get back to our real barracks, and it's 10 o'clock at night or something along those lines, and the company commander says, we are implementing a watch for the night. And I'm like, what the hell's a watch? I've been up for 3 days at this point. And Mansfield, front and center. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me at this point. But it was the path that the Lord had me on. And I realized that entire next day that I look back and I'm like, the Lord was carrying me. I mean, it was the path that he had me on, and he was carrying me. But that's kind of the way that my military career went, and it started off that way. I have a whole bunch of stories that aren't exactly church friendly, in which...
We'll skip those.
Yeah, we're going to skip those. But I love this country, and proud to have served, and I thank everyone else who served.
Thank you. Thank you, Doug. Okay, Will, you're next. Will Beardsley. He's an Army scout, and he'll tell you about it.
So, I joined the Army at 17, like Jared did, and had my mom sign for me. And when I was in high school, somebody gave me a copy of the book Wild at Heart, and that had a huge impact on me. And the kind of the theme of the book is every young man thinks about, do I have what it takes to be a man? And growing up in a single mom home, that was definitely a front and center question that was in my life. And so the military for me was a way to get that question answered. And I knew freshman year of high school that that's what I would do, is some branch of the military. I considered all the branches except for the Navy. I didn't like their hats. And so that was my decision making. And sorry, Jared. You could have given me to wear one. So, but I ended up joining the Army. And you know, my mom had to sign when I was 17, and I told her, Mom, don't worry about it. I'm going intel. That's going to be my job. I'm going to be in intelligence. I get up to the MEP station and realize that, oh my gosh, intel is a lot of paperwork. It's a lot of desk work and reading it. It sounds boring. Do you have anything more exciting? And so the recruiter was really excited to hear that and put me into as a cavalry scout. And it's, reconnaissance, sneaking around in the bushes. And I was like, yeah, sign me up. That looks fun. And growing up here in Orange County, I couldn't wait to get out of Orange County. And so I was like, where in the world do I want to go? I had all these different, places I could choose from. And I chose Germany and thought about all the snowboarding I was going to do over there and how much fun it was going to be. And within 2 months of getting to Germany, we're on our way to Iraq. And which I joined for adventure, so that was good. But how this kind of comes back to God is, I am very much an imperfect person, and very much so in the military. At that time, I think I smoked a pack a day, which the saying is, smoke them if you got them. But so I was very imperfect, but God's sovereignty was so good in giving me exactly what I needed to raise me up. I remember freshman year being worried about, how am I going to do life? I'm not a good student because I don't enjoy school. You know, I'm not dumb, but I just don't like doing homework, so I'm not going to do it. And how am I going to go to college? How am I going to do life? How is this all going to work out? And God, by providing me the military, was a way to initiate me into adulthood, to show me responsibility, and to give me the tools that I needed. And I was reading an author recently who talked about why he writes about war, and he was saying that you cannot have a more, basically, you cannot have a more intense human experience than going to war. And before I joined, I talked to Kevin about my decision to go, and he said, well, you're going to see the good, the bad, and the ugly. And that was exactly what I did see. It was incredible evil, incredible destruction and sadness, but also incredible nobility and incredible brotherhood and courage and just the whole spectrum of human experience was all consumed in those 4.5 years that I was over there. And it was just an amazing experience. And you know, fast forward, you know, I go to Iraq twice. I spent a little over 2 years there. We see combat and have some close calls. But then, you know, I'm out and disappear, try to make my way in the world. And then I get on Facebook 10 years after getting out of the Army and realize that all of my brothers have been meeting up for reunions every other year. And so a couple years ago, went to a reunion with them. We went to Arlington National Cemetery to visit our executive officer who was killed. And seeing the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier and the love and the brotherhood that we have for each other, and they're all messed up. We're all messed up. You know, some of them are not doing well and don't really have their lives together, but we all love each other so much, and it's like no time has passed, and we were back there honoring our executive officer at his gravestone and going and honoring him at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, and I just feel so blessed to have had that experience with these men, and regardless of the politics of the war and whether or not we should have been there, it was an amazing thing to experience with these guys. And I'm just so grateful to the Lord for having brought me through it alive, which, you know, there's no guarantee of that, but also what he continues to do, continues to refine me and continues to use that experience for developing my character.
We can go back to the Navy now. If we could get Sean up here. Nuclear subs, that's all I'm going to say.
Yes, I was a reactor operator on board nuclear submarine USS Dallas, SSN 700, out of Groton, Connecticut, affectionately referred to as Rotten Groton. I was in charge of making sure the reactor behaved, and thank you. And most of the propulsion systems as well. I was in during 9/11. I was actually in school then, and it was an interesting time. You know, I joined the Navy because it was, you know, you see the pictures, and I love the hats, by the way. It's one primary reason that I joined personally. But you get to see the world, travel the world, do exciting things, and being on a submarine after 9/11, the goal was to never ever be seen. So we didn't surface anywhere. we didn't really go anywhere. I got to see the east coast of the United States, but that was about all at the time. So for me, I think, as it relates to God's purpose in my life, I grew up a Christian. I grew up in the Christian church, but when I was in the military, I was far from a practicing Christian or pursuing God in any way, shape, or form. And I think, you know, my life at that time, you know, they say that God will never throw a rock harder than it takes to break your window. And some of us have, like, triple pane ballistic glass windows, and it takes a surface-to-air missile to break through that. So for me, in my military career, I went in with a problem with authority, and I came out with a bigger problem with authority, which is what the military is supposed to break you of, but I was just that stubborn, and it was important for that to play out in my life, because throughout my 20s, I just became more and more stubborn, and God needed to build up a foundation in me that was big enough to break. So the end of my 20s, that's what happened. And it's a pretty amazing story of redemption in when I look at the foundation that the military built. It was almost, it wasn't this amazingly positive foundation that, you know, I came out, I was all straightened up and this, you know, amazing adult man, and was on with my life. It continued to turn me into the individual that God needed to break. So with that, it was beautiful component of the foundation that was necessary for me to be where I am today.
Curtis, one of two West Pointers in the church. CM's not here today, but he can get the tape.
Thank you, Kevin, for asking me to share some words today. So for those of you that don't know my story in the military, September 11th, 2001, was my senior year of high school. So a couple weeks into my senior year, the World Trade Centers and the Pentagon are attacked. And the country, if you were alive and an adult at that time, you remember that the country was in a different kind of reeling place at the time. I joined a few months later, still a senior, but planned to go in right after I graduated. And I won't get into the reasons why I joined. They're the typical adventure, travel, experience. I didn't necessarily ask for my parents' permission, so, because I was 18 already. They didn't have to sign. I called them from MEPS and said, hey, I'm doing this. And my dad was like, your mother and I want to talk to you about that. And I was like, well, it's okay, get her on the phone, because I'm about to go swear in like 30 minutes. And I'm sure they appreciated that. But, you know, Jared, something that you just said reminded me of, it kind of parlays into what I was going to talk about. The night before, I had already gone to basic training, went back home in 2002. And then in 2003, I was going to deploy to Afghanistan. And I was with my friends, and we were staying up kind of late. I think it was like 1:30 or 2 in the morning. I'm leaving their house to go home, and I'm going to fly to Atlanta the next day, meet up with my unit, and deploy. And they're like getting kind of somber, and they're getting like kind of reminiscent about their times with me in high school. And it dawns on me that they think that I might die. And I'm like, this is like, why do you guys think that? And then on the flight over, it dawned on me like, why haven't I thought of that? Like this, this could happen. At the age of 20, I came face to face with my mortality. And that was an early lesson in life of I don't have control of the time and place in which I leave this world. And I need to accept that and always walk in faith so that I'm ready for that. It matures you at that age to realize that you don't have that control over your life that you think you do. And so that was kind of one lesson that I took away from my military service. And then I served until January 2018. I went on, enlisted for a few years, then went to West Point in New York, and was an officer in search and rescue for 4 years, and then I was a Black Hawk pilot for 4 years. So 16 years total. It really became a part of my life. But the biggest takeaway from my time in the service is an appreciation for this country. And by seeing other nations' depravity and desperation, and particularly the oppression of women and racial inequalities, you know, tribes that are seen as less than because of their ethnicity, just a lot of inequality and just tyranny and just destruction and death in the world. And we don't have that here. And you know, my youngest daughter turns one today, and I get the honor and privilege of watching my two girls grow up seen as equal in the school system and in our society. I get to support my wife's career, and everyone values that and her talents and her blessings. And that is not true everywhere in the world. So it's a deep-rooted appreciation for what this country and what our society values. I feel like I live a richer life because I've seen those other things that I've seen. So, thanks.
And now, last but certainly not least, Bo, wherever you are, come on up. Bo. Bo and Will are twins. So, are you identical twins?
Almost.
Almost. Okay.
This close. So I went into the Army about a year after my brother did. So Will went in right after high school in 2003, and I went in 2004. I think I shared this maybe last year, but I was going to college, and I planned to go to the military after college. Thank God I didn't. I'm glad I was not an officer. I can say that, Curtis, because you were enlisted first. But I was going to school, and I got a letter from my brother. And in the letter, my brother told me that he was pinned down in a firefight in a grave site, in a graveyard. And he was on a sniper team over there. And I just remember reading this letter of Will in this combat. And I was like, I cannot stay here in California going to school while my other half is fighting. So I went straight to the recruiter in Mission Viejo off Avery and said, hey, I want to get in the fight as soon as possible. He's like, okay, cool, what do you want to do? I was like, I want to be a Cavalry Scout. My brother's a Cavalry Scout. I want to be with him. He's like, all right, let's go take the ASVAB. Well, I took the ASVAB test, which is like an intelligence IQ test. I didn't do well. So, but that does not measure your intelligence. He's like, well, here's a couple options. You could do infantry. I was like, awesome, let's do it. So I joined the infantry. And I joined really just to get in the fight as soon as possible because I loved the Band of Brothers. There was no other option of any other branches. I thought all the uniforms were stupid except the Army. So I still stand to that. So I got to Germany. We trained for a workout for about a year and a half, and we went to deployed to Iraq, in northern part, Tal Afar. And at the time, that was more firefights, gunfights. And day one, I was tested. And first day in combat, I found myself pinned down on a curb of a street with three guys in an alleyway with three Iraqis shooting at me. And I turn around and nobody is behind me. And it was probably about a 35-minute firefight until the Bradleys rolled in and blew up that building those guys were in. And I remember at the time, I wasn't scared. I was just in training mode. But that night, I went back to my cot. I remember thinking, that's when the fear came in. And I remember thinking, I got another year and a half of this. There's no way I'm going to survive this. So if I'm not going to come home alive, I'm going to be the best bad word soldier I can. And that's kind of my mentality. I did not believe I was going to come home. And with that mentality, I said, Lord, my life's yours. And as I was kind of preparing my mind of what I was going to say, I was like, Lord, help me to be able to convey how it was over there with you and I. How was it over there in Iraq with the Lord and I? Because he was there the whole time. I'll tell one quick story. And I was not on a mission one night because my ankle got torn up from another mission. I tore the ligaments. So I was out of missions for 2 weeks in Ramadi. In Ramadi, I didn't know at the time, I thought all deployments were like this. That place, we were there in Ramadi for 9.5 months, and that was the number one worst part of Iraq at the time. Fallujah was number one, and then Ramadi was right there equal with violence. And I thought all deployments were like that. And so when I got hurt with my ankle, my ligaments tore, I went talked back my leadership back into going back out on missions. The night I was supposed to go back out, my NCO said, Beardsley, put your bags off the vehicle. You're going to stay one more night in camp. And I said, hey, Sean, no way. I got to get back out with the guys. He says, no, one more night. Then you can go back out on the missions. I was like, okay, Roger. That night at 2 a.m., my buddy runs into my room, my AO, and says, Beardsley, are you B positive blood? I said, yeah, roger that. He's like, and at that time, I put my boots on, I grab my weapon, and I run to the aid station. And I automatically take my blood. I think I gave like 2 or 3 pints of my blood. Come to find out, it was my best friend that was in my spot that night that got blown up. And he got his legs blown off, some other organs, half of his arm, and shrapnel on his face. The NCO that called me off that mission got shrapnel in his cheek, one side, and then at the other side took out 5 teeth. So he had a big hole in his mouth, and then part of his eyeball got blown off too. The guy who called me off that mission, he survived. They all survived. But I remember after I gave blood, I had to sit there for a little while because I was so queasy because they asked for more blood of me. I remember I walked over to, I asked the docs, I was like, hey, can I go see some of the guys? He's like, okay, you can't see these guys, you can see these ones. I remember walking over to my NCO and one of my leaders, and he comes over to me, and he was a war-hardened soldier. He was in the invasion of Baghdad. He had seen it all. And I remember laying there, I walk over, and he's laying there, and he comes over to me. I remember him shaking. Like, that happened a lot when guys got blown up, and they survived it. They were just, like, their body was in shock, and he was shaking hard. But he was there mentally. He comes over to me. He's like, I come over to him. I was like, hey, Sergeant Guzman, you good? He's like, Beardsley, just hold my hand. And he was shaking, and he held my hand. I remember how cold it was. And he says, you never get hit. Brother Beardsley, you never get hit. And that was my nickname over there, was Brother Beardsley, because they believed I just had the Lord's anointing over there. And I just put it back. There's so many close calls over there where God was just so with me. And I know the foundation was because of this place. And I told Kevin I was going to go in the military, and he says, don't do it. He tried to talk me out of it, and then he realized he was not going to talk me out of it. So then he just said, I'm going to be praying for you. And I just found a letter of you just recently about Kevin just drenching me with prayer over there. And so, again, I know that some of you guys who were there with me at the time, your prayers got me through those crazy, crazy moments and my brother's deployments. And so I love you all for your prayers. I'm here today. I got 2 daughters now because I believe the power of prayer. Thanks, guys.
You guys, that was awesome. You did such a good job. I mean, they all could have gone on with story after story. I just want to make a point of saying something about the Army and military and war. In the 1930s, there was a huge move in Christian churches towards pacifism, which was, you know, that wars are bad and evil, thou shalt not kill. And it was prominent, and General Douglas MacArthur was running into a lot of problems. And so they had some kind of gathering with pastors and General MacArthur, and they wanted to do away with the Army. And he said, MacArthur supposedly said something like, I have an idea. Why don't we get rid of fire stations? That way we'll no longer have fires. Did you get that? In other words, if you get rid of your military, that's going to end war. No, it's human nature that if you know anything about history, there is always someone wanting to displace what you have. And in Romans 13, it's clear that he anoints civil authorities to be his ministers, even to execute vengeance. And that if we live a godly life, we have no need to fear. When he's speaking about a model good government type situation. And so I really want those of you to know that in my own service and the service I know about, the ones that went in, that there's something extraordinarily honorable about it. And for the right intentions, there's something that anybody that serves comes out. There's a lot of different things that shape who we are now and as we move forward. For those of you that didn't go in, men and women, each of us is in God's highest will for our life. You're not less than because you didn't go in. You're not less than because you didn't play varsity football. You're not less than because of this. You are who you are, but I think we render honor to whom honor is due. And I think these men are worthy of that. And Jesus never met a centurion he didn't like. Did you know that? There's seven stories of centurions in the Bible. The first one is the centurion has a sick servant, and he sends, who it says the centurion loved, and he sent emissaries to Jesus to ask him to heal. But the centurion sent them back and saying, I too am a man under authority, and I say go, and he goes and do this, and he does that. I know that you're under the authority of your father, and Jesus hears what he said. Oh, and he said, I'm not even worthy for you to come under my roof. Just say the word and my servant will be healed. And Jesus said about this Roman centurion, such faith he had not seen in all of Israel. It's amazing. At his crucifixion, after all the suffering, it was a Roman centurion who boldly said, truly, this is the Son of God. In Acts chapter 10, when the Jews thought that the gospel was just for believing Jews, or that non-believers had to become Jews, Cornelius, a devout centurion, had a vision, and it was through him that Peter realized that the gospel was for all nations and all ethnicities. It wasn't just a Jewish thing, in Acts chapter 10. In Acts 23, there had been so much commotion with Paul that he had to be escorted by 200 soldiers and two Roman centurions. So what I'm trying to get across is people that are full of the Holy Spirit, people that are in God's will, God uses army sometimes to protect them. He doesn't have to, but he used two Roman centurions to escort Paul. And so bring up Acts 27, verse 1. I know you know who Julius. Everybody know who Julius is, right? When I decided that we would sail for Italy, they proceeded to deliver Paul and some other prisoners to a centurion of the Augustan cohort named Julius, another Roman soldier. And his job was to protect Paul and get Paul to Rome, because Paul was a Roman citizen and had declared his citizenship, and he had rights. Also, Paul didn't buy his citizenship. He was born a Roman citizen, which even had a higher level on it. So if we go to, hold steady. I want to read a verse, Acts 27:2. So they're on a journey, and they're in terrible weather. And Paul says to the centurion, so now they've got this relationship, this military escort. And to the soldiers, unless these men remain in the ship, you yourselves cannot be saved. Drop down to verse 42. The soldiers' plan was to kill the prisoners, because the ship was going to go under. It had been 2 weeks of unbelievable sailing, and there was no hope, except Paul had told them what they could do to be saved, that they needed to stay in the ship, they needed to do this and that. And by now, the centurion knew he was not only protecting Paul, but something was going on inside the centurion. And they planned to kill the prisoners so that none of them would swim away and escape. But the centurion, I promise to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Military men are protectors and defenders, first and foremost. If a military man or woman does something egregious and unconscionable, murderous, or anything else, I'm against that as much as the night is different from the day. As long as you have human beings, you will always have people that do certain things that aren't right. But the ideal is what we're talking about right now, and men and women that have served that ideal. And he said, the centurion wanting to bring Paul safely through, a young man wanting to get this Iraqi kid out of there, a young woman risking her life in a mission field, say, to get to save this family and hide them. Greater love has no man than this, than he lay down his life for his friends. He says, you are my friends if you do what I command you. This is my commandment, that you love one another. And commanded that those who could swim should jump overboard first and get to land. Keep going. And the rest should follow, some on planks. This is a centurion talking now, not Paul. He had heard Paul's message, and he says, okay, we're going to jump overboard on planks. And this was not what his men wanted to kill these soldiers. So this officer took a chance with a bunch of men, and you've got to understand, the boat's going this way, they're all going to drown, they haven't eaten. It's every man for himself, and yet this centurion named Julius stands up and says, no, we're going to save. Now that's integrity, and that's leadership, and it's in there for a reason. I'm so grateful that we have a country with an army and a navy and an air force, because there are a lot of people that aren't good guys. So, he says, so it happened that they were all brought safely to land. Is that it? Is there a 45?
No,
28-1. That's it, 28-1, then we'll leave it there. They ended up on the island of Malta. Of course, Paul gets bitten by a snake, a viper, but they're all standing around expecting him to die, and he didn't. And that led to a revival on the island of Malta. So as we think about these things, I realized, looking at some hymns, God our help in ages past, my country, 'tis of thee, mine eyes have seen the glory of the Lord, America the beautiful. It's not a story without its imperfections. We all know that about any nation. Or just like each of the men in their own way were saying, I didn't do everything right when I was in the military. But there were some right things that really happened. So I'm going to close, bring Patrick back up here. Would you come on up? Patrick, there you are. I didn't know where you were. And the rest of the musicians that are here. Did you enjoy hearing from those men?
Yes.
I thought it was very good. And the reason I added my own about the centurions is there are good theological reasons to have an army. And any soldier, naval man, marine, airman, coast guard, that has been in war, does not want to go to war, does not like war. War has so many unintended consequences, and there's so many things that affect human life. And but it's been here since the beginning of time, since the beginning of recorded history. And so trying to eliminate war and having deterrence is part of the challenge we all have in our nation. And so I want to try to sing this. Let's stand. Do you have My Country, 'Tis of Thee? Do you know the words? Do you know the words?
I got them here.
You got them?
Yeah.
Okay, I want you to flash back in fourth grade. You were singing this song, so I know you know it. But think about my country. For whatever reason, the way God placed you, he put you in this country. And it is of thee. No matter what tough times you've had in your life, you're free today. You're free. Sweet land, liberty.